You can listen to The Professional Left on iTunes or at our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, where you can also contribute to this podcast. There's a PayPal button at our website, or you can mail us a letter and or a contribution at our P.O. Box, 9133 Springfield, Illinois, 62791.
This is the podcast for December 21st, 2012. It's not safe for work.
Recorded live from just outside the siren song of Charlton Heston's America. It's The Professional Left with Driftglass and Bluegal.
I want to say, first of all, thank you to the listeners who wanted an emergency podcast last weekend. We did record last week's podcast before the horrible tragedy in Connecticut. And I, for one, was very glad I was busy editing and producing the podcast that day because I didn't have the TV on. And you came out to me and said, I need to tell you something. And you're the one that told me what happened. And I was very glad I heard it from you rather than hearing it on TV.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad it could be me. And I'm very glad that we had a lot of activity at the church. It was just the right time for that activity. We had the best seat in the house. There was a young mother and her little itty bitty baby.
Yes.
Sitting in front of us in the pew. And then there was the big children's show.
That's right. We had the children's pageant and the traditional ironing of the children pageant costume that weekend. And it's hard to stop life when you have children in the house. You just can't. And we did pray, and we did turn off the news, and we had to pretty much turn off the news while the children were home, and that worked out for them. I mean, we told them what happened, and we told them that we love them and hugged them and so forth, and I was very grateful to the number of people over the weekend at various choir rehearsals and so forth who said, I really missed your kids this week on Friday.
Yeah.
You know. It takes a village. It takes a village. So,
and I don't remember, frankly, anything since September 11th, where so many people called each other.
Yeah, yeah.
To find out just how you doing, and did you see? And oh my God, can you believe it? Yeah. I know there've been innumerable tragedies, innumerable gun massacres in this country since then, but this one was qualitatively different in that people were just unable to get past it, which is a good thing, and called, you know, from all over the country to find out how their relatives' kids were doing, and you know, how are the children coping with this? Like, wow, that's different.
Yeah,
it's different.
Yeah, well, and you know, there. Not to make light of this, but there's that joke about the guy who's stranded on the roof of his house during a flood.
Uh-huh.
And a boat comes by, a rescue boat, and he said, no, I'm waiting for God. And a helicopter comes by, no, I'm waiting for God. And then he drowns and says, God, why didn't you save me? Well, I sent a boat and a helicopter. Why?
Yeah. What the hell's your problem?
What did you want me to do?
Yeah. That was appropriated by the West Wing, of course, and it was...
Well, I think I thought about it because you and I had to pull a podcast off of Crooks and Liars a while back because of the shooting in Arizona. And we had made jokes about guns in the Republican Party in that very specific podcast that week. And so we just said, well, we're not going to run it. And, you know, we're not going to promote it anywhere because we knew people would listen to it, but people would listen to it in the context that we had recorded it before this Arizona tragedy. And I thought, you know, okay, so when, you know, why, God, why did these children die from guns? Well, you know, a 9-year-old was killed in Arizona or was hurt in Arizona.
Yep.
And a 6-month-old was killed in Aurora, Colorado.
Yeah.
And so, you know, all of a sudden, wow, how many children die? I think it was really great that Obama mentioned that kids die on the streets of Chicago every damn day. You know, it's not, it's something that we have been, you know, not responding to. And all of a sudden it's all at once and it's very young children and it's senseless and it's
Inside the perimeter. It's inside of a, it's suburban white children.
Yeah.
At a safe school.
And it's New York City suburban.
It's very, very different than
suburban.
Than poor kids in Chicago getting gunned down by, in terms of media coverage, not in terms of morality or anything else, but just in terms of the attention we pay.
Right.
Very different thing. And it's,
and I don't want to let go of our culpability in this as Democrats or as liberals, because we gave all of the ground to the NRA. And that's our fault. We can't depend on the Republican Party to kowtow to anyone but the NRA. But we can expect that our side would do more than they did, and they just surrendered on this issue after Al Gore lost.
Well, after Al Gore lost, and I have excerpts from Bill Clinton's biography, which this issue sadly comes up every 6 months or so. And I pulled some quotes from Bill Clinton's biography, which I must say I found on an NRA website.
Yeah.
So they were crowing about
this. Bragging about it. Yep.
Even Bill Clinton said that the reason that Newt Gingrich won in the House of Representatives was swept to power, and Tom Foley and those people got swept to power in 1994, which essentially made it impossible for the assault weapons ban to be maintained. Made it impossible for any future gun legislation to be passed, made it impossible. You know, it set the tone for the entire downward spiral of this country for the last 20 years. Was Bill Clinton said, I forced a lot of people to make votes on guns that cost them their seats. And I remember Bill Clinton saying, I don't think I would ask them to do that again, because it ultimately made no difference. Because
Lawrence O'Donnell said that Ronald Reagan asked them to make to make this.
Yeah.
This was a moral choice.
It absolutely was. I'm absolutely not saying that people should risk their elected positions for taking the moral high ground. What I am saying is that politicians, being creatures of like flatworms, they learn what burns and what doesn't, and they stay away from the Bernie thing. Learned in 1994 that if you go up against the NRA, you will lose. And everything else you want to do will never get done, because you will never be in a position of elected power again. Now, that might be the wrong lesson. I think it is the wrong lesson. There's a Mark Twain quote about a cat and a hot stove, I think, which, you know, if you jump, a cat jumps on a hot stove, it learns not to jump on a hot stove or a cold stove. So it scared the shit out of a whole bunch of Democrats who never, ever bothered to figure out what the real lesson was.
Yeah. And I think we've conveniently forgotten what a horrible candidate Al Gore was.
Yeah.
For a lot of reasons. Yeah. But
we also forgot the fact that he won.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, there's a certain bizarre, but he didn't lose. He won the popular vote, and he won in Florida, as far as most people are concerned.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he was he lost in a 5-4 Supreme Court decision. So, but the impetus for Democratic fear but here's the thing. And this crops up in a David Brooks comment, which I will talk about, if at all, way down, you know, an hour from now. But it's this notion that Democrats did not give up on gun control because they stopped believing it was a good thing. They gave up on gun control because they thought it was a completely hopeless battle. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm perfectly happy with guns in the hands of competent, qualified people who keep them safe, and hunters and sportsmen and so on and so forth. I have fired guns in my life. I used to go out west. I had an uncle. I used to go to his ranch. We used to fire his .22 and his pistol and go out and shoot targets. I loved all that. But that's a qualitatively different thing. I said, using the same phrase yet again, from assault weapons and semi-automatic and automatic pistols that fire 30 rounds at a shot. Those are designed to just slaughter people in large numbers. But Democrats never, at least I didn't, I don't know any liberal who did, never gave up their belief that gun control was a good thing. We simply gave up on the idea that it was ever going to happen because the NRA won. And you couldn't beg, borrow, or steal anyone who you could stand up for public office who was going to take them on, because why not just throw yourself into a volcano? Because that's how much sense that makes. By the same token, Republicans fanatically believe in no gun control, in rolling it back and rolling it back and rolling it back. They are firmly. So I think there's a little asymmetry here. I agree Democrats have been lax and lazy and unwilling to fight for things that we believe in. My elected officials have let me down, but they never once said gun control is a bad idea. Gun control means fascism. Gun control means any gun control at all means that jackbooted thugs of the federal government are coming for your guns. They never adopted that position. The right really believes that.
Well, yeah, and the NRA has never stopped screaming that the left wants to take your guns away.
Yeah.
For money. They lie for money and power.
And this is where there's something very I don't know. This is why Cassandra was such a sad character, I suppose, in mythology. Because I don't think Cassandra ever wanted to be right.
Yeah, yeah.
People hated Cassandra. Cassandra was right, and she ended up, as I recall, nailed up to the, hung in a sack, rotting in a sack on a nail forever.
Mm-hmm.
People kicked the shit out of Cassandra because, and this is really troubling to me. In a very specific way, not this shooting, which should be troubling to everyone, but here we have one more thing that one side has been right and one side has been wrong. Look down the long history of the last 40 years and count on the fingers of one hand the number of things conservatives have been right about. Pot? Nope. Gay marriage? Nope. Fiscal prudence? Remember, who was it that got us into surpluses and who was it that pissed us off into deficit? Go down the list. And I don't mean Democrats necessarily in this construction. There were plenty of Democrats who went along with NAFTA, plenty of Democrats who went along with GATT, plenty of centrist Democrats who went along with a lot of bad ideas that Bill Clinton enacted. But if you look right down the list of really big important things, from Iraq to deficits to social programs to civil rights to pot, conservatives have been and still are on the wrong side of everything. And that's really starting to really freak me out a little bit, because you're having this debate on every single one of these subjects in which the people who were right all along are being very, very conspicuously excluded from the conversation. And it's getting to be so noticeable that it's starting to be I don't know. It was obvious, been obvious to us for years and years that David Gregory's a douchebag. But the fact that you never have on television the people who were right all along, ever, and on issue after issue, it becomes tragically clear that you should have been fucking listening to the left for the last 30 years or 40 years or 50 years all along. And conservatives are just wrong, 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 wrong. And you end up with these painfully schizophrenic conservative discussions, like people like Andrew Sullivan pretending that gay rights has always been a conservative issue and marijuana has always been a conservative issue, and on and on. People who are fundamentally driven mad, I think, by the insanity of their own politics, are desperately warping reality out of shape to pretend that the other side wasn't right. Yeah. And I'll loop back into Mr. Brooks for 1 second before we get on to Gary Willis's excellent column. Sorry, W-I-L-L-I-S.
No, no I.
You sure?
Yep. W-I-L-L-S.
I stand corrected. Then I'm misreading the names on the book spines in my own home, which is unforgivable. This conversation that they have in the New York Times every now and then between Gail Collins and David Brooks. And David Brooks's, the conservative at the New York Times's take on this was, there's really two positions on this issue. Liberals are obsessed with gun control and conservatives are obsessed with mental health. I kid you not, David Brooks says, being that I, David Brooks, feel, you know, am a healer of the breach, I believe we should do both things. I just want to scream.
Yeah, yeah.
Name for me, please, Mr. Brooks, the liberals who don't think we should have an increase in mental health spending. Name for me, Mr. Brooks, the liberals who actually build lobbying organizations around not funding mental health. But again, David Brooks is congenitally unable to tell the truth. He has to lie to make a living.
Yeah.
And so he has to invent phony liberal positions to counterpose against actual conservative positions that his people believe, his conservative friends believe, so that he can pretend there's a middle ground that is reasonably occupied by David Brooks. And that's what our media has become. It is the crazier conservatism has become, the more ridiculous liberals have to be painted in order to keep pretending that there are actually two sides to any argument.
Global. Have you found David Brooks's series of columns on how bad it is that we cut mental health during the Reagan administration?
No. But I will.
We'll dig those up this week, people.
It's not that conservatives in the media, reasonable media controlling conservatives, say these things. It's that they get away with them. It's that Gail Collins didn't punch him in the throat.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It didn't just say, you know, this is stupid. You're a liar. You're a fucking liar. And you lied because you need to pretend there's a centrist position on every issue. You lie about liberals. You've been lying about liberals since you worked for Bill Kristol back at the Weekly Standard. You're a fucking fraud. And oh my God, is it true you're teaching a course on humility at Yale? Can that possibly be true?
That you can't fail.
You can't
apparently
fail.
It's a pass course.
There's no test and you can't fail it. So it's like David Brooks's entire career. I didn't want to, but it's one more thing in which conservatives have been flagrantly, conspicuously, tragically wrong, and liberals have been right.
Yeah.
And it's about fucking time someone in the goddamn media, someone with some balls of, but then again, you see what happens when people admit that. Mr. Ornstein and Mr. Mann.
Yeah. You get just erased from the Sunday show.
Who were well thought of, who were well respected right up until they said, you know what, this is really a Republican problem. Maybe in 10 years it won't be true. Maybe 30 years ago it wasn't true. But right now, at this moment, the thing that's fucked up in this country is the Republican Party has lost its damn mind. It started with Newt Gingrich. It began with Ronald Reagan. It sort of accelerated under Newt Gingrich. But they are the problem. And they were fucking erased from the media. They are non-persons. They're welcome on NPR every now and then, and they show up on little Sunday shows where liberals sit around and talk about the real world. But in the mainstream political conversation of this country, they have been rendered unpersons because you're never allowed to fucking say that. And one day when I go to heaven, I'll ask God, who show me the face of the person who was pulling the strings behind this all along. I want to know the name of the person who refuses to let the truth be spoken on national television in the United States of America.
It's General Electric and Rupert Murdoch. Yeah. That's who it is. Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
And speaking of.
You want to read this thing from Gary Wills, which I read and thought was really, really good. I'm glad you brought it to my attention.
Because it's a different way of looking at tragedy. And I want to read that, and I want to read a little something by Harlan Ellison after that. But
oh, sure. Everybody take a drink.
Everybody take a drink.
You can take a drink now, everybody, if you want. Okay.
Although if you ask him, he'll tell you he's not a science fiction
guy. Yeah,
so
yeah. We're going to take a drink anyway, Harlan.
Take a half a drink. But Gary Wills has an excellent post, an excellent piece on guns being the American Moloch. And Moloch is a god in ancient times, a violent, bloodthirsty god who was worshipped. And Mr. Wills writes, "The gun is not a mere tool, a bit of technology, a political issue, a point of debate. It is an object of reverence. Devotion to it precludes interruption with the sacrifice it entails. Like most gods, it does what it will and cannot be questioned. Its acolytes think it is capable only of good things. It guarantees life and safety and freedom. It even guarantees law. Law grows from it. How then can law question it? Its power to do good is matched by its incapacity to do anything wrong. It cannot kill. Thwarting the god is what kills. If it seems to kill, that's only because the god's bottomless appetite for death has not been adequately fed. The answers to problems caused by guns is more guns. Millions of guns, guns everywhere, carried openly, carried secretly, in bars, in churches, in offices, in government buildings. Only the lack of guns can be a curse, not their beneficent omnipresence. Adoration of Moloch permeates the country, imposing a hushed silence as he works his will. One cannot question his rights, even as the blood is gushing through the idol's teeth. The White House spokesman invokes the silence of traditional in religious ceremonies. it is not time to question Moloch. No time is right to show disrespect for Moloch. And that's
really, really so true. And idolatry, not only of guns, but of masculinity and this belief of the Wild West. And also, I think the idolatry of congressional seats and power and inside the Beltway lobbying and money. And you can go on and on. And all of that kills kids. Mm. It just does.
But those are the necessary sacrifices made to the God.
Yeah.
And the God, again, like a God, the God is incapable of doing any harm, any bad. It must be heretics. It must be the fact that its commandments are not being obeyed. You know, hurricanes only kill cities because gay people are having sex.
Yeah. Yeah. Or it is, we can't have prayer in school. Yeah. That drives
this is
nuts.
Because I was flailing around looking for a way not to make this make sense, because there's nothing about this that makes sense.
But I have to interrupt you for just a moment. We have a very good middle child here who's been very quiet while we've been recording. She's home from school earlier than her siblings, and she's been very good.
That's me.
And you want to tell them what the weather's doing right now?
It's snowing like crazy, and I'm going over to my friend's
house up the street. She's gonna go see Michael's kids. Let me just put it that way.
Very good.
So we'll see you soon. And she's all bundled up, including her snow pants.
I'm a walking pillow.
Yeah, she's a walking pillow. So goodbye. And thank you for being so good.
You're welcome.
And this is the first snow we've had this year. And it's coming down. It's coming down. So, all right. So she's gone now. So now the swearing can begin.
Well, and I'm doing a little more talking than I want to.
No, that's
to,
okay. I wanted you to read that.
But there's nothing about this that makes sense.
Yeah.
But there are frames of reference that we can find that create a way to understand what's really going on here. Mm-hmm. And one of the frames of reference, it's like in physics, you have various ways of looking at the world, and Newtonian and quantum and so forth, each of which makes a certain kind of sense, each of which has its limitations. But the idea of looking at guns as a god, as something that is literally worshipped as an idol and is sacrificed to by its followers, and who are terrified of offending the god, mm-hmm. and believe that if you don't worship, then perhaps you deserve to die, because you don't understand how powerful the God is, actually makes this clearer. And I did want to bring up Mr. Ellison, because 35 years ago, more than 35 years ago, he published a collection of short stories called The Deathbird Stories, which he describes a pantheon of modern gods. And his theory was that the our modern deities have replaced older gods. And actually, there are thousands and thousands of gods in the history of mankind that are no longer worshipped, that nobody even remembers. And the reason they're gone is that their acolytes stopped worshipping them.
Oh.
And they stopped having any power once the acolytes moved on to something else. And this is a little quote from his introduction, that gods can do anything. They fear nothing. They're gods. But there is one rule, one seal of Solomon that can confound a god, and to which all gods pay service to the letter. When belief in a god dies, the god dies.
Mm-hmm.
And when the last acolyte renounces his faith and turns to another deity, the god ceases to be. And we have replaced a lot of our Christian god with a god of prosperity. In fact, there's an entire church, an entire Christian church built around the parable of the talents, of making money. We have mammon, we have violence, we have technology, we have war, we have climate change. We really do have a lot of old school bloodthirsty gods. I mean, if you think about the people who were obdurately opposed to discussing climate change,
mm-hmm.
these are people who on some level really do want to see the world die. Want to see, they think the world should be sacrificed because it is an awful, terrible place or an imperfect place or whatever. But by whatever construction they make the argument in their own head, they're perfectly willing to kill the world to make their god happy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And they will be saved in the afterlife.
Yes, absolutely.
You have people who have contempt for science, people who believe the earth is 9,000 years old and nothing you can say or do. And once you understand they are carrying out a religious mission, and understand that they really do cling to their guns, gods, and gays, mm-hmm. because each one of those is a separate deity in their pantheon. Mm-hmm. Contempt for people who are not like them, reverence for the god of killing people at a distance, the god of terrible thunderbolt power, and the Old Testament god of the world should be ruled by white Christian men. Mm-hmm. Once you understand that you're dealing with religious fanatics, they disguise their fanaticism as the Second Amendment, but they're religious fanatics. Then you understand why it's impossible to change their mind.
Well, and I found it fascinating that the polling among the ground troops of the NRA is that 30 round clips and above is not something that they cling to.
No.
And that this is a million-dollar lobbying organization that doubles down every single time there's this threat for money to make, you know, to scream with their shit in their hair about someone's going to take away your guns. And that's how they've been able to maintain power. And I think what you're saying about when the acolytes stop believing.
Yep.
If the 75% of the NRA members who disagree with their leadership on this issue of the big clips goes to town on it and says no, then that god loses power.
I don't know. I think you have to quit the NRA.
Yeah, well, that's what I mean.
I think you have
to walk
away.
That's what I mean. They have to leave in order to save it. They have to quit in order to save it.
Well, and this you can extrapolate that right through Grover Norquist.
Yeah. Oh,
the
yeah.
The god of tax cuts cannot be, you know, must be sacrificed to. And if it means old people have to die in the streets, well, fuck them.
Yeah.
They're not worth living because the god of tax cuts will take care of everything. The god of tax cuts will solve all problems. The god of the free market will dry every tear and calm every heart. And the only problem that you ever have with the god of tax cuts is you didn't cut far enough.
Yeah.
We weren't conservative enough. We didn't go far enough this time. The god was not sufficiently mollified by sacrifice. And again, once they tear up that stupid contract with Grover Norquist, his power vanishes. It disappears. But until that happens, we are dealing with people who know absolutely no limit to their willingness to sacrifice other people to their ideology, to their mm-hmm. religion.
I think that's a really good segue, not to run away from this issue, because we, Driftglass and I, have vowed to not forget this.
Yeah.
And not let this go beyond, you know, into the memory hole.
No.
That's not going to happen. But we're going to move on to other issues. And of course, I mean, it's there aren't any words. We're going to talk about Robert Bork, and sure. I also Robert Bork died this week, and also any hope that Susan Rice would be Secretary of State died this week.
Yep.
The bullies won in that instance.
Yep.
And speaking of bullies, Robert Bork.
Yeah.
He died during Zapadan. I'm not gonna put any connection there. I just want to point that out.
Uh-huh.
And I did want to mention to you, Driftglass, that Newsbusters, that right-wing website, was horrified and very offended that the Washington Post would, in the aftermath of Newtown, actually talk about Saturday Night Massacre in relation to Robert Bork. How dare they?
Yeah. Except, except that should go on his fucking tombstone.
Well, and Wonkette says, yeah, Washington Post should not be able to name the thing that it's called.
Yeah.
Because. Yeah.
Sorry, man. No.
Because that was his job. So why don't we talk? You go ahead and tell us, give us a little expose on who Robert Bork was. And
well, Robert
what he
Bork,
did.
Robert Bork was a charter member or a lifetime member of the Federalist Society. He was an activist conservative judge. He was a conservative's conservative. He is the man Antonin Scalia wanted to be. And he has a long and very, very interesting history when it comes to conservative issues. And I just want to go over three things very quickly. The first was that when Richard Nixon was looking around for someone to do his dirty work, when he was firing the special prosecutor, he fired the special prosecutor. Then he was looking to fire everybody who was investigating him. Mm-hmm. And the people who were investigating him wouldn't quit, and the attorney general wouldn't fire him. So he hunted around for someone who was scummy enough to do his bidding. And he found the Solicitor General of the United States, Robert Bork, who was perfectly willing to do Nixon's dirty work because Robert Bork was a scumbag.
Well, he believed in the absolute power of the presidency.
Yep.
When it's Nixon.
Ironically, during the Clinton years, Robert Bork famously said that Clinton was a sociopath. Nixon wasn't, mind you, but the reason he had no problem with persecuting Bill Clinton and had no problem with driving him out of office was, and I'm quoting from the Power of Nightmares, not the Power of Nightmares, or maybe it is the Power of Nightmares documentary. Robert Bork saying in the Merck manual, Merck is a pharmaceutical company. They have a manual listing various disorders, and they listed sociopath. And if you look at a sociopath, it describes Clinton exactly. Someone who's charming, who has no particular feel at all for the people he is charming. He is unable to resist instant gratification and so on and so on. Goes right down the list. We had a very dysfunctional man in the presidency. That was very dangerous both as a model and as if a crisis had arisen. I had no confidence that he would meet it. So Robert Bork was handing out psychological profiles of people he didn't like. He didn't like Bill Clinton. He hated Bill Clinton. So it was perfectly okay to go after Bill Clinton, to slam his reputation, to destroy him, to impeach him. But when it comes to Nixon, Nixon wants to fire people who were actually investigating his criminal wrongdoings and his treason. Well, sure, we'll fire him because he's a Republican after all, and Robert Bork is a good Republican. And in between those two, the most infamous thing in my book that he did was one of the things that conservatives had hated for a very long time was the Fairness Doctrine.
Yeah.
Hated that thing because with the Fairness Doctrine in place, you can't have Rush Limbaugh on the public airwaves. You can have all you want on cable. But generally speaking, when it comes to.
Sounds like someone's not at home down at the neighbor's house. Ah. How is it out there? Your cheeks are so red.
No. Oh. All right. But I was walking down there. Everything. Okay, so I was walking. Could you hold these?
Yes, the wet mittens.
I was walking down the street, and it felt longer than usual. But
she's taking off all her wet stuff right now. She's
yeah,
covered in snow.
I know.
Yeah.
But on
How
the
was
way
it?
Back down, on the way down to this. All the water was fine. If you put your hand in it, it wouldn't freeze solid.
Uh-huh.
It was like water you'd have in a cup. But on the way back, it turned to slosh.
Uh-huh.
So it turned into snow. And what I'm worried about is right by the driveways, on the end of the driveways, there's like 3 inches of water. Really, I'm not exaggerating at all.
Uh-huh.
And that's turning to slosh too. So
that might freeze
still
up.
Gets if it still gets colder, like it is, it's gonna freeze and no one's gonna be able to get out.
Okay. Well, it sounds like after we record the podcast, Drift Glass, we need to go out and shovel a little bit.
What do you mean we?
Nothing on the driveway.
I mean both of us.
Oh. We don't have two shovels though.
We have a big, strong broom and a shovel.
Yeah, okay.
I'll take the shovel.
All right. No, I'm kidding. Yes, after.
I call shovel.
All right. You go get your wet clothes off and go upstairs for just another 20 minutes, okay? So, Drift Glass.
Yeah.
Yeah. We were talking about what happened between Nixon and Clinton.
Well, between Nixon and Clinton, of course, only one thing happened. If you read the conservative history of the world, Ronald Reagan came and saved us all from deficits and communism, and reigned for 8 years without opposition or causing any trouble at all, and then rode off into the sunset and never raised taxes and never said a discouraging word and didn't run racist campaigns or anything. But yeah, during the presidency of Ronald Reagan, one of the many, many, many things he had on his checklist to do as a radical conservative was get rid of the Fairness Doctrine. Because You can't have a Rush Limbaugh or a Fox News with the Fairness Doctrine. The Fairness Doctrine, as weak and as mealy-mouthed as it was, simply said, if you're going to present one point of view on television or on radio, you pretty much have to present the opposing public point of view, the majority opposing viewpoint, if you want to use the public airwaves. They're public airwaves. They're owned by you and me, and you can't turn them into a nonstop propaganda mill for your crazy ideas. So it doesn't have to be one for one. It doesn't have to be – there's no PC police. But by and large, if you're going to present one side of an issue that's a public, political, controversial issue, you have to let the other side have time, equal time. And conservatives, of course, hate that idea because they lose. They can't stand to debate liberals because they lose. So they need an unrestricted, unfettered propaganda machine to keep their listeners and followers lobotomized. And they need Fox. If without Fox or without right-wing hate radio, conservatism would dry up and blow away because there's nobody to tell them what to think. And the original idea for Fox News, for example, was Roger Ailes, young Roger Ailes, who was a communications director for Richard Nixon, came up with the idea of GOP TV, which would just be Republican television. And it all boiled down to the fact that conservatives believe if you aren't spewing their talking points uncritically, then you're part of the vast liberal conspiracy. If you're not regurgitating their nonsense, then you must be part of some conspiracy to hide the truth from them. So along comes Ronald Reagan, who...
One of the things I think is interesting about the Fairness Doctrine as it was practiced is it was, you know, it really was what Stephen Colbert said, which is reality has a liberal bias.
It does.
And
I'm sorry, it does. It just does.
It just does. And so... when you're looking for, and this isn't Republican or Democrat, when you're looking at the Vietnam War and how it was being fought and how it was being covered and how we were being lied to.
Yeah.
Telling the truth, as Walter Cronkite did he went to Vietnam and looked at it.
And told people what he
told
saw.
Told people what he saw.
You know, journalism.
That had a very pro-peace, Lyndon Baines Johnson bias to it.
Yeah.
And Johnson recognized that. He went, brother, we've lost America. We've lost every living room in America because Walter Cronkite told the truth.
And so repeating.
So that's the thing I find fascinating is the reason to get rid of the Fairness Doctrine is because truth has a liberal bias. And so when conservatives are screaming about the liberal bias in the media, they were talking about truth telling.
Yeah. Well, and because if you scratch a conservative, scratch a teabagger, and you'll find a whole host of deeply held conspiracy theories ranging from the Kenyan usurper to the secret socialism to the Communist Party. That's why Alan West.
When?
What?
Don't forget the UN.
Yeah. The UN's coming
on
for
world
you.
World conspiracy.
And that's why Alan West could get up and say there were 31 known communists or whatever it was in the Democratic Party and not just get laughed off stage, because there are millions of feeble-minded, angry bigots out there who believe every fucking word of that. And if they don't hear their own conspiracy theories coming out of the radio, they believe that the radio has been taken over by communists, because that's the only reason you wouldn't tell the people the real truth about this government. And so Reagan resolved to get rid of that pesky rule that said you can't lie on the air and get away with it. And he solicited the assistance of two out of three federal judges in the federal circuit where the case was being tried or where the opinion held. And it came down, as I recall, I'm going back many years, came down to the interpretation of literally one word in the statute, whether or not it was the president's law to enforce or not, whether it was up to the executive branch to enforce it or not. And it was like the difference between on and over. I mean, seriously, it came down to that minor of an interpretation. Yeah. And the two federal judges he found to back him up out of three, the two-thirds majority he needed to kill the Fairness Doctrine, was Antonin Scalia and Robert Bork.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have Robert Bork to thank for Richard Nixon
in
being allowed to run a
little love nest.
Uh-huh. And you have Robert Bork to thank for Fox News and right-wing hate radio. You have Robert Bork and that breed of conservatism that led to rolling back abortion rights in this country, rolling back gun control in this country, destroying campaign finance in this country. They have been a plague on this country. Conservatism has been a fucking plague. And one of the patient zeros, one of the plague bearers, has been Robert Bork. So I will not dance on his grave, but he will not be missed. And his kind of thinking will not be missed.
And now we're going to read a letter.
Yeah.
We're going to read a letter that's very critical of us in a very loving way.
Thank you.
Thank you, Sam, for writing us. Uh-huh. Sam in Tennessee wrote to us. Hi, guys. I love the podcast, wait for its upload anxiously, and steal many of your good points to use in conversations of my own. I've even managed first of what will be continuing love offerings, as they might be called. Fran, you convey a sensibility most like my own, and you, Driftglass, represent the aggressive debate style that most, including myself, wish that they could mobilize when in the middle of a political argument. But, Driftglass, you have one quirk that's really beginning to chafe on what's left of my nerves.
If it's only one, I'm doing really well.
I was going to say, what? One?
Yeah.
And I thought I'd just come out with it rather than let it fester. You've got a visceral hate on for the southern part of the country. The first couple of times that I heard you say Sisterfuck, Arkansas, or Lap Drool, Alabama, I thought it was amusing. But the more that kind of thing pops up, the less amusing it is. I don't believe I've heard anything about those corncob-sucking a-holes in Indiana, the cow-humpers in Wyoming, or the potato effers, and I'm sorry, but there's a 10-year-old in the room right now.
Yeah.
The potato effers in Idaho.
Potato fryers.
Fryers, yeah. That was the one I was looking for, yeah.
Yeah.
I live in Tennessee.
Uh-huh.
And being the buckle of the Bible Belt, it's not surprising that old Mitt Mitt? Who's Mitt? Oh,
Romney.
Mitt.
Remember him?
Yeah. Mitt carried the state with 60% of the votes. But Driftglass, 40% of the population were just as glad as you that Obama pulled it out.
Don't doubt it for a minute.
Man, when you speak of the whole region with such scorn, not only do you do a disservice to our fellow pinko commie liberals, you diminish your own credibility with a regional bias that's damn near as bad as unreasoning racism. And I know full well that's just not your thing. So just try to cut us a little slack and try to keep in mind that we're not all the enemy down here.
Uh-huh.
Hope your family has a lovely holiday season and that my little gift via PayPal helps that happen. Your friend and loyal supporter, Sam in Tennessee. And I want to say that we have also received criticism in this same loving vein about trailer dwellers and how and the person that wrote us, I think, was really living in a trailer as a way to leave a small carbon footprint on the planet and was a real hippie living in a trailer for the purposes of having small living and so forth and saying, you know, we're not all just toothless hillbillies. A lot of us are living in trailer dwellers because it's the friendliest thing to do to the planet.
Mm-hmm.
And also, I want to point out to everyone that our three children were all born in Alabama. So we know what you're talking about. But go ahead. I want you to respond.
Well, Sam, I was born in a town that is now famous for being the epicenter of fundamentalism in the West, home of the Promise Keepers. Yeah. I have a couple of siblings who were born in Iowa, the cornfields of Iowa. My hillbilly Irish, Scotch-Irish family hails from Missouri and basically weren't part of the Confederacy because they got the hell across the river before the press gangs got to them. They ran away. I have a relative who is, I believe, famous for being one of the last people hung for horse thievery in Missouri. So I haven't lived in the South, but I have visited there many times. I have friends in Kentucky and have visited there several times. And everything you say is quite true. My family bequeathed to me a great love of storytelling, a great love of that kind of country, and the beauty of it. And whatever I have in the way of intelligence or storytelling ability myself, I got from them. That being said, look at the electoral map, Sam. It's the fucking Confederacy.
I think he totally gets it. Yeah.
Yeah. And I, once we have a direct popular vote for president, this won't be a problem. Once we stop having electoral colleges and giving power to states that should not have power, this will not be a problem. Once we stop gerrymandering Republicans into districts where the only way to win is you keep moving further and further to the right, this will stop being a problem. I also, you know, hail for a long time from Chicago. And you might remember that Martin Luther King said, essentially, I thought the South was bad until I visited fucking Chicago. I lived through the Harold Washington administration when almost half of the Democratic Party voted Republican rather than support a black man as mayor of the city of Chicago. There are vicious.
And those were Irish people voting Republican. Yep. Let's Irish face
and,
it.
Irish and Polish, a lot of Irish, a lot of Poles, a lot of Catholics, regular Democratic machine, reliable daily voters who jumped ship and voted for a guy named Bernie Epton, whose campaign slogan was Bernie Epton before it's too late.
Oh, man.
So believe me, there the plague that that vexes us, that I am alluding to when I make my little snide little comments, has gone pneumonic. It's everywhere. It's in every corner. It's all over the country. That being said, there's no denying the fact that when you wind it all back to the beginning, and mind you, the North was no saint in this discussion, but when you wind it all back to the beginning, you find yourself standing in the Confederacy and standing among states that would rather commit treason than let black people be treated as human beings, and who would rather commit treason 50 years later and 100 years later and 110 years later, who fought viciously and brutally and murderously, who lynched people, who blew up churches rather than let black people and white people get married. And if you trace the various permutations and mutations of that disease to the modern day, you can't avoid noticing that the contempt for gay people comes from the same place that contempt for blacks came from. And that comes from a white, Christian, conservative, male, hierarchical view of the universe. And in this country, we tried to set up an entire government based on a fascist government that exploited its populace as animals for slave labor and enforced its rules by murder. And that was the Confederacy of the United States. And a whole lot of boys down south and a whole lot of girls down south never got over it. And they can mask it and mutate it and pretend it's not happening and deflect it and talk about states' rights and nullification and interposition and the glorious good old days of the South and Southern style and Southern cooking. And all that's true. Hey, I laugh at Stephen Colbert, who's from South Carolina. I would commend to you the great works of Octavia Butler, yeah. The late, great Octavia Butler, who wrote a lot about the difficulty in having a mixed heritage. Before there was the time traveler's wife, Octavia Butler wrote a story about someone who was involuntarily and randomly time traveled back to the South. But it was a black woman of mixed heritage who had to save the life of some great, great, great grand ancestor who was a rapist.
Wow.
And she never made a moral judgment. She just said, our history of slavery and our history of who our parents were and our grandparents were is very complicated and very mixed and very, very hard to sort out. And yes, it is true that the past was a horrible, brutal place full of bad people who were doing bad things to black people. But some of those people were white people, and they're my relatives too. And I wouldn't be here today if it weren't for that history. It doesn't redeem that history.
Nope.
But it points out how very complicated and how very difficult getting past America's original sin will always be. So I apologize for insulting your part of the country. I will.
Well, we have a lot of listeners like Sam, though, who are isolated in the South.
Yeah.
They are liberals who are isolated, completely isolated, and feel that isolation.
Mm-hmm.
And so we don't mean you folks.
No.
And we don't mean the South in general. I mean, I think sometimes you and I do discuss things in very black and white terms.
We do.
And bring up the Confederacy, and maybe we need to say the Confederacy rather than the South, and use that as a term which means Southern white, male-dominated, pseudo-Christianist,
yeah,
conservatism, racism, all of those things that are represented by Newt Gingrich and racial.
You mean Newt Gingrich?
You know, yeah.
Newt Gingrich from Georgia. You mean
from
that
Georgia? Yeah. Well, and all of the times that he's used racist language to get elected, mm-hmm, or to make a point.
So there is an. You're quite right. There is an ideology that is poisonous to this country that, mm-hmm, we have to find a way to.
And I don't think Sam would disagree with you on that.
Yeah, and
as he says in his letter, we're not all the enemy down here, and I agree with that. But we can be more careful in our language and say.
But I'm probably not going to be.
No, you're probably not going to be.
I'm probably not going to be.
And, you like the way the sister thing, Arkansas, well, rolls off your tongue.
I do. I like.
It's got so many K's in it. And it's,
I know. It is a delightful. It's not onomatopoetic, but it's got a good mouthfeel to it. Mm-hmm. And I'm sorry that it does, but some things just do. And I am obsessed and love words and the way they sound. And sometimes I say and things that are. Strange or offbeat or whatever, but I like playing with the poetry of the language that my Southern relatives bequeathed to me, and for which I am eternally grateful, and which they stole from Shakespeare. So I am, you know, it is the ideology that we are opposed to, but as long as you can take a map of the Confederacy and lay it over the electoral map of America and where Republicans vote is identical to where the slaveholding states still existed, then we cannot pretend that that ideology does not dominate and predominate in certain parts of this country. And I can't get away from that fact. I feel my heart goes out to people who are stranded in places where they are isolated. And we've talked a lot about that on this program, what to do and how to reach out and building communities online and building communities like this one. But it is a fact that a whole bunch of the people who are sitting in the Senate right now and the whole bunch of people who are sitting in the House right now who are pathologically opposed to anything this president does because he is black, mm-hmm, come out of the Republican Party, which has become the party of Jefferson Davis, which has become the party of the South. And they didn't call it a Southern strategy because it was from the West.
Yeah. Yeah. We haven't had a chance in this podcast to talk about John Boehner.
Yeah.
Or to talk about the possibility that the White House might be thinking about touching Social Security. And
Rice. Got to talk about Susan Rice a little bit.
And we have to talk about Susan Rice. Well, the bullies won. And that's a tragedy. And I won't forgive John McCain for that, although I don't think he cares much what I think.
Well, now they're going after Chuck Hagel.
Now they're going after Chuck Hagel. Jennifer Rubin.
Yeah.
Wants to know why we're thinking about nominating somebody that hates Israel and is an anti-Semite.
And I don't think they're capable of learning it over a long period of time. But at some point, if you repeat it often enough, eventually someone in the White House will get it through their heads that the only way to cope with Republicans is to stand on their neck and never get up.
Yeah.
Because the minute you let the pressure off, they'll come after you.
They start going after. Well, and I don't understand what the White House thinks they're doing with this Social Security thing. I don't think it's 19th level chess. I think it's just ridiculous.
Yeah.
And again, if I could wish a New Year's resolution on our listeners, it would be to go and grab a copy or listen to it online, or listen to it the audiobook of The Truth with Jokes and the chapter on Social Security.
Yeah.
And don't touch it. That's the point of that chapter. The Truth with Jokes by Senator
Al Franken.
Al Franken.
Uh-huh. Yeah, John Boehner. Enough about the only thing you need to know about John Boehner is remember a few weeks ago, or was it only a couple of weeks ago, when Mitch McConnell filibustered his own bill?
Yeah, that was last week.
Yeah. They are so beholden to crazy people at this point that you watch a series of Republican leaders reverse themselves in mid-sentence, because again, this is the monster they built. They created this electoral beast to win elections, and now it's running amok, and they can't control it, which let's add that to the long, long, long list of things liberals warned you about. And now the monster has come home and now you can't control it. And the thing that just amuses the shit out of me is that John Boehner is desperately hanging on to a job for which he is completely unqualified.
Yeah.
And completely incompetent. Yeah. And I don't think anyone has mentioned the fact that John Boehner, in the long roll of history, is might very well go down as the single most incompetent Speaker of the House in history. Mm-hmm. He is.
Well, until Eric Cantor gets the job.
Yeah.
And apparently he thinks it's going to be easier. And
but seriously, I don't understand. There's a certain thing politicians and other CEOs and people I've worked with who are willing to step on bodies to get ahead. Mm-hmm. And whenever they get to wherever they're going, they're never happy. They're just ambition-driven robots. But clearly John Boehner is just getting the shit kicked out of him every day by his party, by the people that he works with, by the people he's come up with. His own caucus eats him for lunch. And yet he just insists on keeping that fucking job, that he's terrible at it. And I don't get that.
Well, I think the Republican Party has no idea how to be the majority party. You and I have talked about that before, that they do very well as the minority party, stopping things and running things into the ground and being the opposition to a sane majority that tries to get things done and doesn't always have their brains in the right place, but usually has their hearts in the right place. And all of a sudden, you know, John Boehner's being required to say which cuts. And he doesn't know how to do that. Mm-hmm. They don't know how to be in the majority.
Well, and that's
when they
that's
are in the
thing.
Majority, they're run by crazy people, as you said.
They should. I really would like to see Louis Gohmert as the Speaker of the House. You know, get someone, you know, Virginia Fox, Michelle Bachmann as the Speaker of the House. Someone who really is, because Boehner's
a true
still
believer. Somebody who really believes this.
Yeah. Boehner's still trying to pretend that he doesn't have a mob of lunatics behind him, and they're not all in his party because people like him built their party to make people like that want to join their party. Yeah. So I would like to see someone show up, you know, in bear skins with a stone axe as the Speaker of the House going, ah, because then you could actually have a real debate between what the two sides really look like.
Yeah. Yeah.
Weak technocratic Democrats with a liberal streak that goes through them. And, you know, brain dead barbarians who believe every crazy ass thing that Rush Limbaugh tells them to believe. That would be a very interesting debate to have. It would be a very healthy one, I think, because we could stop pretending that.
So you really think Rick Santorum shouldn't have been the Republican nominee?
Oh, yeah.
Are you kidding me? Instead of Mitt.
Him or Gingrich.
Yeah.
They're the
Gingrich was smart, though. Yeah. I mean. Yeah. Gingrich was ready to move left. He was the one who called the Ryan budget right-wing social engineering.
But then
he was poised. And then he was stomped on.
No, then what did he say a week after that?
No, 3 days after that. You can't use what I said on Meet the Press yesterday.
If you quote me verbatim of what I said yesterday, then you're lying.
Yeah.
And again, the problem is not Newt Gingrich per se. The problem is you have a party full of people who are stupid enough to listen to Newt Gingrich.
Yeah.
And a party of who are bigoted and hateful enough to listen to Rick Santorum. Yeah. The problem is not the party. The party represents its base. And the base are just the scum of this country. And they've been all gathered, like in Mordor. They've all been gathered into one place to be put in harness of some cause that apparently the people who built the harness forgot. They have no idea what to do with these people. Because on the one hand, they should just let the Koch brothers rule by fiat. Mm-hmm. They should just get all of this rhetoric about how they care about anybody but themselves out of the way and have a straight up fight between Hegelian social Darwinists who believe everybody but them should either be peons or dead. And the rest of us, let's have that discussion. But we keep getting sidetracked with this delusion that Republicans are not thugs and bullies and bigots and assholes. And they are. There's been a great sort of sifting, sort of a centrifugal process of the last 30 years where all the normal, sane, decent people have been driven out of the GOP. Now they're pure. They're the pure essence of what it was to be a Republican. And that is to be the party of Jefferson Davis.
Yeah.
And let's have that fight, because we have to have it every 20 years, apparently. Apparently, the Confederacy has to rise from its ugly grave and fight against modernity and normal people, and with a fistful of money, so they can hire people like Michael Steele and Andrew Sullivan to help them pretend they're not crazy. And then after a while, those people get fired or tossed overboard or get sick of being stooges for evil people. And then you get to have the actual straight up fight between the forces of evil and the rest of us, who are not saints, but are by no means batshit crazy assholes who want to see this country come to an end.
Don't touch Social Security.
Yeah, I think that's what I was trying to say.
Every week we featured our website and Facebook page an internet kitty sent in by you, the listeners. This week's internet kitty is named Press, as in Meet the Press. Ah. But Press was named for the way he presses his eyes together when he's happy.
Oh.
What do you think of Press? He's cute, isn't he?
I think he looks like a tiger.
Yeah, kind of. Got
well,
lots
pictures,
of whiskers.
Post those pictures.
Oh, we will. You can send your internet kitty to us at our email address, proleftpodcast@gmail.com. Do feel free to write us. We love hearing from you. And be aware that if you write us at any address, we reserve the right to read your email or letter on the air unless you say otherwise. So, Driftglass, how are the internet kitties doing this week?
Well, Blue Gal, the internet kitties figure the ancient Mayans are wrong because they've never met any ancient Mayans.
Let's think about living. Let's think about loving. Let's think about the hooping and the hopping and the bopping and the loving, lovey-doving. Let's forget about the whining and the crying, the shooting and the dying, and the fellow with the switchblade knife. Let's think about living. Let's think about life.
This podcast is recorded under a Creative Commons license, copyright 2012, Driftglass Blue Gal Podcast.
Oh, and thank you to the person that sent us a Tom Tomorrow penguin.
Yes.
Yeah, Pango.
Thank you. And middle child likes to have that up on her bed. She's kind of absconded with it.